Here.
Good evening. Thank you all for being here. My name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I am a representative from House District 45, which is Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
I'm Nancy Nathanson, a state representative from Eugene.
That'd be me.
Hello, everyone. I'm Lou Frederick. I'm state senator from District 22. That's North and Northeast Portland. So if you ever go and see a Blazers game, you're in my district.
And as like David has already said, being of the part of the best Senate district in the state, from Charleston, Oregon, to right here, Arnie Roblins, District 5. Thank you.
I also represent the best district in the state. I'm Betsy Johnson. I have the honor of representing Senate District 16, North Tillamook County. So from about here up to third is Roblin land. After that, it's me. Clatsop, Columbia, Multnomah County in the working waterfront and portions of Washington.
I'm Senator Richard Devlin, and I, too, represent the best district in the state. But I know where I am tonight, so I won't press it. I represent Lake Oswego, Westland, Tualatin, and Lower Southwest Portland. So I will quickly go through the guidelines. And this will not count towards the time we are here. We will be here for 2 hours of testimony once we begin testimony. We'll be calling three people up at a time to the table here. When you first come up, sit down, and whoever sits down first, go ahead and start testifying. We also will call up three people that we will have on deck here. These are the three chairs that say reserved on them, so that when these three people are done, and they'll wait there till they're done, then we will call up those next three, then we will call another three. And you should just start speaking as soon as you sit down. In addition to that, you will have 2 minutes. Let's see where our timer is. It's right behind me right now. And it's very clear to you if you're at that table. It's not clear to me because it's behind me. But when that gets to 2 minutes, it will beep. To keep this going, I will actually go to the next person at the table almost immediately. So please don't feel offended if I cut you off, but we do intend to get to as many people as possible tonight. We will also be shifting from budget area to budget area, because we've had you sign up in human services, in education, public safety, and other areas of the budget. So we're going to shift back and forth. We would also ask, so that we can get to as many people as possible, that you refrain from applause or overt outward statements, because anytime we get applause, we have to stop for a little bit, and actually it just, there'll be three or four people that we won't get to hear from if there is a lot of activity in the audience. We're actually here to hear from you. We're here to hear the content and to hear what you're concerned about. We will also not be responding to questions, because any attempt we made to respond to questions would just take from your time, nor will we be asking you questions. Every single person here is available by email, and their numbers are in online, and you can call them anytime you want to. Please call your local representatives first, and they can contact me. But we are all available. If you do not get to testify tonight, or even if you do and you have written testimony, please give it to the person here. It's from our very capable staff, and we will make sure that it becomes part of the public record. If you do not have testimony to turn in, but you would like to turn in testimony, we do have an email address, and it's available. I think they'll be handing it out at the table out there. It's Ways and Means. It's just one word, waysandmeans.budget@oregonlegislature.gov. And actually, that we're all available online. I think Representative Nathanson and myself and others have received testimony, and what we do when we receive it is we just forward it on so it's in the record and it's available to all the members of the committee. That ends the sort of guidelines. I will get started right now. I apologize in advance because my pronunciation of people's names is not always going to be perfect. It depends on their handwriting, and it depends also how difficult their names are. The first three people to come up forward will be Mark Lathard, former Commissioner Lapp, Leanne Thompson, Commissioner Thompson, and Sharon Smith. And on deck will be April Johnson, Kathleen Merritt, and Amanda Robinson.
Go
Co-Chair Devlin and Nathanson, members of the Ways and Means Committee, and especially the two best senators in the state of Oregon, Senator Roblin, Senator Johnson, and the best representatives in the state of Oregon, that being Representative Gomberg. As you all know, this is your last statewide meeting of the full Ways and Means Committee. Thank you, each of you, very much for your work and your dedication. I know it's been tough. You've heard a lot of sad stories out there, but remember, Oregon is a great place, and you're here to represent Oregon and keep it a great place. In the short time I have before you, I'd like to put four bills on the radar screen before you. First is House Bill 3270. This bill is the work of the legislative task force that I chaired during 2016 at your request to find long-term sustainable funding for ODF&W. Our work is complete. House Bill 3270 is done. As I testified before the Revenue Chair Barnhart's committee a couple weeks ago, he asked me, and I was encouraged by Representative Witt and Representative Helm, to try to get on the Ways and Means Natural Resource Sub to present the bill and discuss in details with you. I hope you consider that, and I hope you allow me to come before you, that subcommittee. We are eager to share the details of the bill with you. The second bill is House Bill 3151. This bill, sponsored by the majority of the Coastal Caucus, begins the process to address a very, very scary scenario in Oregon, that being the sudden oak death problem in southwest Oregon. I just spent the majority of the day with Senator Merkley. He's chairing a task force that I'm facilitating to address this sudden oak death task force. So, I've been asked to, I'm going to skip that to save time. The third bill is Senate Bill 805, championed by Senator Roblin during the last legislative session. It restores the cuts made in the governor's budget to OSU Extension Service, the Ag Experiment Station, and the Forest Research Lab. Senator Johnson and I testified yesterday before Senator Denbrough's committee, and he made it clear it's coming your way.
Thank you very much. Please proceed.
It's not often that Commissioner Labhart gets cut off, but my name is Leanne Thompson. I'm a Clatsop County Commissioner. I'm here to talk about ecologically sustainable economic development. You have written testimony. You have it electronically as well. What we're looking at is to reinvent the economy of Oregon so that we have family wage jobs in ways that are ecologically sustainable. Senator Johnson has her OMIC project in Scappoose. I'm in favor of supporting that project with whatever ask she has for funding. I trust her judgment. Well, hey, who wouldn't? Now, when it comes to mass timber technology, cross-laminated timber and all of that, I want to see factories all over rural Oregon to build housing particularly. It isn't enough that we just have the housing. We have to build it in our local communities. We need those local jobs. We don't have specific requests at the moment. They're coming soon. You know that rural Oregon desperately needs those ecologically sustainable manufacturing jobs, or we face becoming ghost towns or theme parks. A lot of the economy of Oregon has been reinvented, unfortunately, not in rural Oregon, so that's what we're looking to do. It's not a silver bullet. We're not there yet. There's a lot of collaborative work that needs to be done. Working toward a future that makes better use of Oregon forests allows multiple benefits. If we have secondary production on our timber products in local manufacturing facilities, we do more than provide good jobs. We provide a way to pay for essential services. I know you're committed to that because you're on this committee. Last and perhaps most important for many is that this future will give us the means to also protect and preserve forests in Oregon as wild places, places that provide clean air and drinking water, allow recreational opportunities, and species and habitat protection. Thank you again for your work. I'm eager to partner with you on this.
Good evening, everyone. I am here tonight just to speak to some very specific issues. My name is Sharon Smith, and I live in Wheeler, just up the coast here, the little three village communities, Manzanita, Wheeler, and Halem, in North Tillamook County. Most of the headlines that we see in the newspapers and being talked about all the time are really big issues: education, healthcare, the Oregon Health Authority, the Department of Human Services and Public Safety. These attention-grabbing headlines all these programs are very important, and there will be a lot of people here to speak to those issues tonight. But tonight I wanted to draw attention to proposed cuts to programs directly connected to the coastal communities that I see as I go up and down the coast. These include the Oregon Water Resources Department suggested a reduction of funds. Your committee has suggested reduction in funds that support data collection, empirical studies, and enforcement. The DEQ's water resources efforts, proposed cuts to technical services and staff and supplies. I think these will be very important resources for us going forward as we plan for the future. And I looked at the list of ODFW's 17 to 19 program priorities. I'm concerned that some of the proposed cuts would affect commercial and recreational fisheries, research, monitoring and management, habitat restoration, and the Western Oregon Stream Restoration Project. These programs are very important to the coast in terms of quality of life, recreation and tourism, jobs, and economic development. I know you all are facing some really horrific negotiations in terms of this budget year, and trying to cover a budget shortfall without cutting the heart out of everything. Thank you very much for your work. Thank you.
Will the next group please come forward? And while they are coming forward, on deck will be Karen Mahoon, or Mahar. She wants to speak about revenue. Rachel Pettit and Brooklyn Bush. Please begin.
My name's April Johnson. I'm a nurse at one of Oregon Youth Authority's North Coast Youth Correctional Facility. We are in Warrenton. I've been there about 11 years now. They want to close us down and move all of our youth. We have a population of 54. We can keep 54 to McLaren, which is huge. It is not in the best interest of the youth. They do better at a smaller facility. This is now the third time that this facility has been slated for closure. It did close earlier in 2000, and then in 2011, it was close to closure, didn't. Now we are supposed to be closed. My concern is for the youth, obviously. It's not in the best interest. The youth don't want to go to McLaren. It's too big. They're attacked. There's assaults. It's not a good place for them. They get better drug and alcohol treatment at our facility, notwithstanding the staff. It's approximately $6 million in revenue that the county is going to lose out on. These are living wage jobs that are going to be lost. It's uprooting entire families, and it's going to have a snowball effect because a lot of our staff will be coming down here at Tillamook Youth Correctional Facility, and we'll be bumping staff out of there. It's not a good ideal plan. So I would like to hope that you guys would consider and support the keeping open of this small facility. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Amanda Robinson, and I work in an executive support at the Oregon Youth Authority in Warrenton, and I want to urge you to keep open the North Coast Youth Correctional Facility. I also want to urge you to find a long-term solution to the state funding problems that we keep facing. Since hearing of the potential closure of North Coast, the facility staff members have all been put in an extreme amount of stress. For some of our staff members, this will be the second time losing their jobs. Since the facility shut down previously in 2003, the facility closed its doors in 2000 due to the budget shortfall, similar to the situation that we're in now. Many of the staff members speak about the stressors regarding the loss of a good income and benefits. Staff that are staying with the agency are looking to commute hours a day to another work location. Another issue that if we close the North Coast facility, that would be a major blow to Clatsop County as a whole. The facility and its staff bring over $6 million yearly to the local economy. If the facility closes, not only would the county lose monetarily, but it would lose very talented and dedicated individuals and their families. These folks are productive members of Clatsop County and work diligently to improve the lives of Oregon's youth. I again urge you to find a long-term solution to the state funding issues that we keep facing. It's disastrous to the youth at a facility like the North Coast Youth Correctional Facility for the staff and the Clatsop community.
Good evening. My name is Kathy Merritt, and I am the very part-time library media specialist at North Coast. I would imagine not one of you have ever been into one of the youth correctional facilities. Don't know for sure. I've been there for 3.5 years, and the staff there are absolutely amazing. Now, tonight, I am wearing a necklace that was designed by Holly McCone Jewelry in Astoria, and it is in honor of the Megler Bridge's 50th anniversary last year. You are the bridge between all of us and this budget, and I encourage you to work your best, whether it's PERS reform, which we need, keeping North Coast open, sharing the cuts wherever. A few weeks ago, there was a big article in the Oregonian on Oregon City High School. What did they do to improve their failing students? Did they build fancy rooms? No. Did they build more windows? No. It was people. It was people working with the youth at Oregon City High School that turned it around. And the people that work at North Coast Youth Correctional Facility have their hearts and souls with those youth. I've seen them work. I've seen the education staff, and they are all amazing. I believe in cuts across the board, not slamming one facility. Also, we have support from the Clatsop County Commission and the loss of jobs, and you will get a copy of this, and from the local AFSCME union in support of keeping North Coast open, and you will get a copy of that. In closing, the people out there are amazing, but they are so depressed right now, they don't want to come. It's just a great place. The kids are amazing. It's like a last chance for a lot of them. So I ask you, please, make cuts evenly. You have a horrible job in front of you, but you are our bridge to figuring out what's best for Oregon. So thank you.
Thank you very much. The next group will come forward, and while they're coming forward, I will call up to be on deck Emily Fanjoy, Tillamook County Women's Resource Center, Ellen DeMaul, and Philip Romero. Please begin.
Hello, my name is Brooklyn Bush. Honorable members of the Ways and Means Committee, thank you so much for the time to speak with you today. Like much of the agriculture education students and supporters you've heard from on your road show, I'm here also to express the importance of agriculture education, Senate Bill 230 and House Bill 2382. As a product of ag education and FFA, I can't speak enough about what the program did for me, but I'm going to save that for some of the FFA members you're going to hear from tonight. The part I'm going to talk about is my passion, which is being a high school agriculture teacher and FFA advisor at Tillamook High School, and my passion for all these blue jackets that you see around the room tonight. What I can't stress enough about ag education is that it truly is a place for everybody. We have a seat in our agriculture education classrooms for the students who maybe are straight A students, have a ton of support at home, and maybe know exactly where they want to go in college. We also have a seat in our classrooms for the students who maybe do okay in school, B's, C's, and know that they want to go straight into the workforce after high school. And we also have seats in our classrooms for the students who maybe struggle with finding a place to fit into, really don't have a connection to school, and maybe don't know what they want to do after high school. And I feel that agriculture education is truly an outlet for everybody and truly helps all students for the better to be successful citizens as they move forward in life. Agriculture education to me is truly one of the best education systems because of our inquiry-based learning in the classroom and laboratory, the leadership aspect of FFA, and the work experience and career exploration and supervised agricultural experiences. So thank you for your time, and thank you to everyone who has supported CTE so far. Thank you.
My name is Rachel Pettit, and I live here in Tillamook. I'm the farm-to-school program coordinator with Food Roots, a nonprofit whose mission is to build a more robust food system along the North Oregon coast. We urge you to maintain funding for the farm-to-school grant program through House Bill 2038. HB 2038 would provide funding in the form of grants administered by the Oregon Department of Education to reimburse school districts for their purchases of Oregon-grown and processed foods and for food, gardening, and agriculture education activities. Farm to school can serve as a significant financial opportunity for Oregon's farmers, fishers, ranchers, food processors, and food manufacturers. With state investment of $1.6 million in farm-to-school funding, last year schools boosted the agriculture economy of Oregon by purchasing $3.4 million of fruits, vegetables, meat, seafood, poultry, and dairy products from 116 different Oregon businesses. During the 2016-17 school year, my organization, Food Roots, will provide 565 students across three school districts in Tillamook County with over 310 hours of hands-on nutrition, gardening, and agriculture education that includes tastings and cooking with locally grown produce and eggs. By purchasing the produce we use for these lessons from local farms, we not only support the agriculture economy of Tillamook County, but we also provide families with the information to purchase products from these local farms themselves. Research across the country supports the value of farm-to-school programming. Students who participate are more likely to perform at a higher level in school, are more likely to choose fresh fruits and vegetables at lunch, and are more likely to ask for fresh fruits and vegetables to be served at home. These behaviors strengthen Oregon's agriculture economy, and in a time when access to healthy food and diet-related health concerns are at the forefront of public health, state investment in farm-to-school supports a healthier future for us all. I would also invite all of you to visit sites and see these positive impacts for yourself.
Yes.
My name is Karen Mahurin. I live in Rockaway Beach, and I want to thank you all very much for being here tonight. I'm here to address several issues, but I will make my points short and sweet. My priorities are public education, health care for all, environmental issues, and transportation. We all know you are facing a $1.6 billion shortage, and I don't envy the decision you will have to make. However, the answer as to how to increase revenue to me is simple. Deal with the situation of corporation taxes. Oregon has been good to these corporations, and yes, they have brought jobs. But now is the time for these large corporations to pay back. I realize the initiative didn't pass, but you as the legislature can solve that. It is unacceptable for drastic cuts to vital services while corporations refuse to pay their fair share and fund campaigns against progress. As a grandmother of school-aged children and a former public school employee, I am terrified for the future of public education. The new Secretary of Education is a strong advocate for vouchers for private schools, among other drastic issues. Vouchers for private schools would take money out of our state education funding, which is already struggling. If Oregon has to come up with more money to fund public education, a fair and equitable increase to corporation taxes is the only answer. A free, quality public education is written into our Constitution. Good quality health care should be a basic human right, not just something that the wealthy can afford. It is incomprehensible to me that senior citizens go without prescription medications they need because they cannot afford them, or that children go without vital treatment. My time is running short, so I'm going to skip to say I'm very disturbed that if the federal government dismantles the EPA, that we must have clean air and clean water, and that it doesn't cost anything to make amendments to the Forest Practices Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward. And while they are coming forward, if Jacob Van Buskirk, Cynthia Jacoby, and Gary Westoby could come forward in the on-deck seats. Please begin.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, vice chairs, members of the committee. My name is Emily Fanjoy, and I'm the health programs coordinator for the Tillamook County Women's Resource Center. I'm here on behalf of myself, my colleagues, and the women we serve, and because I want you to know it's more important than ever that Oregon not only maintain access to basic health care, including reproductive health care, but that we expand access to life-saving and cost-saving reproductive health services for all Oregonians by passing the Reproductive Health Equity Act, House Bill 2232. We ask you to support this bill when it gets to your committee. Furthermore, we stand with Planned Parenthood because Planned Parenthood stands with us and 70,000 Oregon patients every year. The services Planned Parenthood provides save the state upwards of $70 million a year by helping women prevent over 14,000 unintended pregnancies. And that's just a fraction of the cost-saving services they provide. Planned Parenthood operates 12 health centers in Oregon that deliver incredible value to public health goals and to their patients. Those health centers perform breast exams, pap smears, and offer screenings for STIs, high blood pressure, and physical exams. We want you to make sure that OHP patients continue to have the freedom of choice in accessing care at Planned Parenthood, and we want you to continue the C-Care program, which benefits low-income women in every county, including Tillamook County. As coordinator of a collaboration between healthcare in Tillamook County and our community advocacy program for survivors of intimate partner and sexual violence, I'm painfully aware that the reality is that approximately 50% of women age 15 to 29 seeking services at reproductive health clinics are currently experiencing intimate partner and sexual violence. Because of birth control sabotage, reproductive coercion, and pregnancy pressure, they're at high risk for unplanned pregnancies against their will and infections of STIs. C-Care, Planned Parenthood, and access to comprehensive reproductive health care services are vital supports to these women, especially to all women, especially these women who are most vulnerable. I understand the challenges our state faces, and I know you have to make tough decisions, but cuts to preventive programs are short-sighted and will increase costs over time. I urge you not to make these cuts when corporate taxes are so low. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Ellen DeMille. I live in Lincoln County about 23 years. I've been disabled for 8 years with degenerate bone disease, which required multiple joint surgeries that left me fused bones in my neck. And my husband and I have been disabled about 10 years. Until about a year ago, I was his unpaid health care provider. It made it more difficult for sometimes I needed to also look after my grandchildren. About a year, we both got health care providers. Jody, who helps me 4 days a week. She helps with personal care, housekeeping, preparing food. I'm really nervous. If I didn't get her help, it would mean I would be in constant pain and unable to lead a normal life as possible, and unable to care and have fun with my grandchildren. I know the state has a difficult position with the budget holes, and if you guys make some difficult choices. And just keep in mind, it would help everybody. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Philip Romero. I'm a finance professor at the University of Oregon, a former business dean there. And I was a chief economist to a state on a couple of occasions. So I'm both an observer and participant in state budgets. And, you know, to put it very simply, you hear one of two things 99% of the time at things like this. One is, don't cut me. The other is, don't tax me. I'm here representing myself and a business partner, Randy Miller, who's the inventor of a orthogonal approach that would allow you to substantially reduce the deficit without doing either of those two things. It's possible to finance health care on a short-term basis and substantially cut the state's expenditures. Our rough estimates believe we could virtually eliminate the health care portion of the state budget deficit, which, as you all know, is about half of the total. 2 minutes is not enough time to explain this in any detail, but the basic approach is called the Health Insurance Revenue Bond. It's been documented in a book we published last year called Health Financing Without Deficits. It's been Mr. Miller, the inventor of HERB, had a very productive meeting with Representative Nathanson some weeks ago and encouraged me to come here and expose you folks to it as well. I want to also commend your two co-chairs, Representative Nathanson and Senator Devlin, for taking leadership and trying to frame some of the basic issues in this intractable problem you have, which is more than I can say a lot of other state leaders have done. And to that end, I want to commend all of you for coming out on a misty Friday night to hear a lot of testimony. But I'm here to tell you that there are, at least in one case, an orthogonal solution that would allow you to avoid some of the painful choices you will otherwise have to make, if only we get a chance to explain it to somebody in more detail. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, if the next group will come forward, and while they are coming forward, I will call on deck Rodney Roberts, Jesse Sweet, and Eva, it starts with a G, but you're here to speak about the Family Protection Program. Please begin.
Hello, Senator Devlin, Representative Nathanson, my Senator Arnie Roblin, and my Representative Gomberg, and the rest of the representatives and senators. You have all been elected by us, the people of Oregon. I notice that Oregon ranks 39th in overall taxation among the 50 states. 39th. We are 14.3% below the national average of taxing. And I'm here to respectfully ask you to do your job. As Democrats and Republicans, you need to get together and solve this shortfall of funds in our state. And I know it's not easy. There has got to be common ground to stop this way of kicking the can down the road so that we end up voting on initiatives which fail to solve our taxing problem. It's your job, the legislature. I believe that you can do this with goodwill among all people. I have a paper here which I would like to refer to. It was published by the Oregon Center for Public Policy. It contains 13 suggestions on ways to raise revenue, and I'm sure you're all familiar with this. I hope you will refer to it in this problem. The first one mentions corporate gross tax receipts, reforming itemized deductions on our income taxes. Personal income taxes can be reformed. Taxes can be raised on alcohol and tobacco.
Thank you very much. Ms.
You're
Jacoby,
welcome.
Would you just state your name for the record? We need it on the tape.
I'm sorry. I'm Cynthia Jacoby from Newport, Oregon.
Thank you.
Good evening, Co-Chair Devlin, Co-Chair Nathanson, and the Full Ways and Means Committee. My name is Gary Westaby. I work for the Oregon Youth Authority right across the yard over here. I've been with the Oregon Youth Authority for 21 years, and the Lord's allowed us to work with these youth for this period of time. It's been rewarding. We've been able to see firsthand how effective we've been with the youth that we've served, and leading. Right now we're leading the nation in technology, vocation, and educational corrections. So it's a great opportunity to work with these young people. However, I'm not here to represent OYA. I'm here to represent myself as a constituent. And one thing that I want to point out is I voted for 97, and I'm proud of it. And I looked at it very carefully before I actually voted. I compared the Oregon Revised Statute and the initiative side by side, and there was identical language until you get to the $25 million area. So what happened was those that were for 97 were outspent almost 2-1. If you look at something like our own salary, my wife and I, we work at OYA, we paid $6,500 in state income tax for the amount of money that we earned. That's equivalent, that's more than a company that makes between $5 and $7 million a year, and as far as their minimum tax is only $4,000. Where's the equity in that? I would suggest and recommend to the Ways and Means Committee to find a way to be able to make a more sustainable form of funding, and also to stop balancing the budget on the backs of the working public. I thank you very much for your time and consideration. I can be reached across the street if you want to talk further.
Hello, my name is Jacob Van Buskirk. I'm from Manzanita. And
okay, that's not for you.
Very short. I would like to highlight the issue of transportation in this area. We have to drive long distances to get basically anywhere. Many people travel to Portland, myself included, multiple times a month. That's a long drive over roads that can be quite hazardous in good conditions and are very dangerous when it's raining and or snowing. Highway 53, I don't drive anymore because it's too dangerous, and that's at the current funding level. Any sort of cuts to transportation are unacceptable, and the only reasonable solution that I can see, because I don't think any of the programs that have been talked about tonight or will be talked about should be cut, is we need to raise revenue, and the only reasonable way to do that is to raise the corporate taxes. Individuals are already being taxed enough. Any sort of tax you do that is individuals are paying for is regressive inherently, and it just doesn't make sense to provide services to people and tax them at the same time. This gentleman next to me pointed out quite correctly that he's paying more money in taxes than the corporation making millions of dollars, and that doesn't make any sense. So please raise corporate taxes.
The next group will come forward. While they are coming forward, if on deck will be Hayden Bush, Greg Burrell, and Gail Levisk. The last one was largely going to be on education. the next group up. Please begin.
Hi, my name is Rodney Roberts, and I'm from Seaside, Oregon. I am here to talk to you about the North Coast Youth Correctional Facility also. I work for Oregon Youth Authority. Before working for Oregon Youth Authority, I spent 24 years in law enforcement down in Coos Bay, Coos County. I used to send kids to the correctional facilities. Now I work at it. I will tell you that as an ex-law enforcement officer, I enjoy my job more working with these youth in the facility than I did working the streets. These youth come from different walks of life. We get great relationships with them, help them change their lives around, help them become quality members of society for the most part. There's some kids you're not gonna fix, but a lot of them we can, and we have positive influence on them, especially in the very small facilities. We have kids call us back saying, hey, thanks for all your help you did. Really appreciate it, you gave me a lot of good guidance. We have really good school there. The kids are in school, they're getting their diplomas. We've had a lot of kids graduate from there. Education, that's what they get. They get education, they get experience on how to deal with things in life. We teach them how life is better without the gangs, it's better without crime. Turn them into productive members of society. Closing down the North Coast Youth Facility, that's what's gonna happen. And I know that's a money issue, and I understand that, and I would agree on the fact that we need to do something about corporate taxes to help offset these issues. Because one of the things that's gonna happen if you close this is a lot of kids are gonna pay the price for it. They're the ones who are hurting. It's not just us who are losing our jobs in Clatsop County and Tillamook County who's gonna lose money from the people working there. Those youth are the ones who are gonna lose. Thank you very much.
Hi, members of the committee. My name is Jesse Sweet. My mom was at Coffee Creek when I was 2 years old. When she went away, I thought I wasn't gonna see her again. While she was gone, I felt really sad. While she was gone, my life was horrible. My life was sad. Then my mom got help from FPP and things got better. It got better by letting me see and talk to her. I got to see and talk to her. Visits were awesome. My mom's been home for 3 years. Having my mom home now makes me feel happy. Now I am living with her. Other kids that have moms at Coffee Creek should get the same help we got. They deserve to feel happy and loved too. Everybody deserves to see, talk, and hug their mom. Please help make sure FPP doesn't go away. Thank you.
Please take a moment.
Sorry, I do apologize for that.
There's some tissues right there.
Oh, please. Good afternoon, Chair Devlin, Chair Nathanson, and members of the board. My name is Eva Guzman, and I'm from Seaside. I'm here to share with you how important the Family Preservation Project is and urge you to continue to fund this invaluable program. I'm an FPP alumni. I was incarcerated at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility for nearly 6 years. With the help of FPP, I was given a chance to extend my education in college and advocate to get into treatment when I had it qualified. I learned positive parenting, healthy eating, how to manage money, and what I can do to correct my credit. But that's not all I learned. I learned how to write resumes and job applications, which I never knew. They helped me to figure out the area in which I would be paroling to and what support systems there are. They made it possible for my family and children every school season by helping with school supplies and backpacks, gas money to help transport them and to form visits, and also gave my father and husband a place to relax and communicate with other caregivers for support. We were able to talk to teachers and communicate with them about our children's schooling and grades and behaviors, how we could help them be better in school and in success in life in general. All of this has had an impact on my transition in kids' lives. It gave us the ability to have a relationship and grow, and the chance to be a part of not only each other, but living life in general. I'm currently on my third year working at a treatment center for women. I'm studying to get my KDAC license. I have 10 years clean and sober. I'm a speaker for women in prison with children in the Red Ledge Transition Center. My goal has been to work with women and children just like myself. FPP gave me the ability to do that. They believed in me when nobody else did. They gave me the ability to be a part of my children's life. It's so critical. This was high stakes for my children, with approximately 90,000 kids with incarcerated parents. It is high stakes for us all.
Thank you very much. Please, will the next group come forward? And while they are coming forward, I will call up John Peterson, Bruce Delore, Jim Murray, and this is in Human Services, the group after this group. Please begin.
All right. Hi, my name is Greg Burrell, and I didn't come from Portland to Tillamook to share urban problems. As bad as things are in Portland, the so-called economic recovery has left much of rural Oregon behind. Oregon's small businesses and individuals have a huge tax burden, while taxes on out-of-state corporations are 50th out of the 50 states. I am a teacher who chooses to work as a substitute and sees children who don't get the services they need from an underfunded school system. By the way, I've also been volunteering at McLaren Youth Correction Center for about a decade. But in rural Oregon, many districts save money by only having school 4 days a week. Those kids get 20% less free breakfast and lunch than my students do. How can anyone justify cuts to a budget that is already inadequate to meet the needs of our population? I come here to stand before my rural brothers and sisters to remind them and you that when we think programs are important, we don't talk about cutting waste. We talk about making sure that all needs are funded. That's the way we talk about our military. We know how important defense is. I have heard some Republicans talk about fully funding schools without raising revenue. Does that mean they believe that funding adequate health care for senior citizens and other Oregonians isn't important enough to raise adequate revenue to pay for it? Do you know that Oregon already has one of the shortest school years in the nation? Oregon kids get a year less school than kids in states that adequately fund education. As the number one signature gatherer for Measure 97, I have made a commitment to education. The fact that PERS will never allow me to retire is part of that commitment. In Portland, we have 30 kids in a class, but in rural Oregon, many districts have teachers teaching as many as five subjects. No matter how talented can stay current in five subjects, I ask you, fully fund it all.
Thank you. Please begin.
I am Gail Levesque. I am the grandparent and legal guardian of a child in the Preschool Promise Program in Tillamook. I submit this testimony in support of continued funding for Preschool Promise and other early learning opportunities for children. They support families and ensure that our children are ready to succeed in kindergarten and beyond. I became my granddaughter's guardian just about 2 years ago. At that time, she was just 3 years old. I knew her first 3 years were filled with instability and uncertainty. When she came to live with us, she was significantly delayed verbally, physically, and emotionally. Our first step was to provide a safe, stable environment for her. My husband and I both work full-time. We needed daycare, so she went to her auntie's house for daycare. While there was an educational component of that, it was definitely daycare. As she grew, it became apparent that there was the next step that we needed to take. So she went to the Early Learning Center in Tillamook, which is a fantastic place. They provided her with a nurturing environment and a preschool component, and she made additional gains in her social, emotional, and verbal development. When I started hearing about Preschool Promise, I knew it was the next logical step for bringing her along with her peers and preparing her to enter kindergarten, having gained the early learning skills that would help ensure her future educational success. That program and her development as a participant in the class at Liberty Elementary School have far exceeded our hopes and dreams. She loves attending, she's learning every day, and she's gained confidence emotionally, socially, verbally, and educationally. I want to thank you for this opportunity to share my story and the impact that the state's investment in early childhood has had on my family and my community. I urge you to prioritize early childhood funding and continue to invest in preschool promise and our early childhood system. It is without a doubt an investment in the future of Oregon.
Thank you.
First off, I want to thank the honorable senators and representatives before us for coming and listening to your constituents today. For the record, my name is Hayden Bush. I'm here today representing Oregon State University's Extension Service, and that is the Outreach and Engagement Division of the university. I could talk all day about cows, plows, and sows, which is traditionally what we think of when we think of extension, but my job here today is not to talk about that. My job here today is to explain the things that we are doing that are truly important to this community and to our state. And certainly the traditional agricultural extension that we do is absolutely important, but I have been under the impression that many folks in our state don't really understand where we're really heading with extension. One of my specific jobs and the jobs of some of the colleagues I work with here in Tillamook is to do outreach to minorities, specifically to the Latina population here. And we have a program called Juntos that boasts a 100% high school graduation rate from those folks that go through that program, an amazing program with that minority outreach. In addition, we are fostering partnerships for economic development, career success for students and parents alike, but also for business owners to be able to start businesses and have a successful chance at running those businesses in a challenging climate, and I think we can all agree on that. I certainly do not envy the job you guys have in front of you. We'll appreciate the service that you provide our state. Also, because I go home to the redhead that already testified, I would also like to make a plug for Senate Bill 230 and House Bill 2382. Agricultural education is absolutely important to our students because it provides that perfect structure of education of classroom, leadership, and experience. And so I would be mad at myself, but also think my wife might be mad at me if I didn't make a plug for that. Thank you again for what you do, and thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. The next group will please come forward. And while they are coming forward, this is the next group that's going to come forward. It's going to be natural resources and virtually everything else. It's Heather Mann, Fred Holstowaite, someone knows, and David Wells on deck. Please begin.
Greetings. Thank you all for coming here. My name is Bruce DeLoria, and I and others are here representing the CASA of Lincoln and Tillamook Counties. Betsy Henderson is the executive director in Lincoln County, and Vanessa Jennings here is the Tillamook program manager for the volunteers. She works as a half-time employee, pretty much full-time, and she couldn't make it because she's in court today. Our CASAs, if you didn't know, are court-appointed special advocates for children. And it's been described to me as the eyes and ears of the judge. And they do much more than that because they fill in all the gaps. As you know, because you deal with all the problems, domestic problems hit underprivileged areas disproportionately hard. And when Here it says, tell a heartrending story. Well, I don't have to because you know about, you're familiar with the things that happen to children when parents and guardians and abuse come into their lives, and they lose homes and their homes change, and they have changing caseworkers, and they have changing lives, and they're in the development part of their lives that are the foundation of our society. These are the children that we try to follow and remain in the picture. It's like finding an adult to trust that remains in the picture for a long time. There's a handout that we left a bunch of them for you. You'll be seeing these. Roughly, the disorganization of the two counties helps 215 children served by, for 20 months average time served. Okay.
Yes, next, please.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jim Murray. I am a retired CPA and the volunteer treasurer of Tillamook CARE. I am speaking on behalf of CARE. We need significant increases in the Medicaid reimbursements for our assisted living residents. Tillamook CARE owns and operates two nonprofit assisted living facilities. The vast majority of our residents are low-income seniors. Unless we have full occupancy, these facilities now operate at a break-even or a loss. This leaves no funds for needed capital expenditures. Full occupancy is not reasonable because as residents leave generally for medical reasons, there is a need for refreshing the room, which requires time. Significant increases in Medicaid reimbursements are needed primarily because of the minimum wage increases recently enacted by the Oregon legislature. Each of the first three annual increases in minimum wage represents a 4% increase in our annual costs. The following two increases are a 6% increase in our costs. Current budget proposals are for flat funding long-term care Medicaid reimbursement rates. You don't have to be a financial genius to understand this is a formula that will rapidly result in the closing of these facilities. Please increase the Medicaid reimbursements to cover our increasing costs. You enacted through the minimum wage law and other cost increases, food, utilities, etc. We do not want our needy residents to have no place to live and be without essential services. Thank you.
Hello, my name is John Peterson, and I've lived in Lincoln County for about 23 years. I've been disabled for about the last 10 years with emphysema, cancer, heart disease, nerve damage, and early dementia. I am also required to use CPAP breathing machine and oxygen. My wife Ellen was my unpaid care provider until about a year ago when both she and I qualified for the Oregon Home Care Program. Since then, I've had a state-paid home care worker, Amanda, who comes in to help me for part days, about 3 days a week. Amanda's work is important because I need to be in a dust-free environment due to my emphysema, and she helps with my daily activities so that I continue to have support in my home. I'm currently taking about 20 medications and need help making sure I get the right ones at the right times. If the Oregon budget shortfall ends up meaning my home care services are reduced, that will also reduce my ability to lead as a normal life as possible and my quality of life. I know that this is a very difficult process for you, but legislatures need to increase the state revenues instead of cutting essential services for me and other Oregonians needing help. It is not all right that we are looking to at cutting services while being the last corporate taxes. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the next group please come forward? And while they are coming forward, I'm going to be finishing up the public safety list. It looks like either Don or Donna Dryden from North Coast Tillamook, and then from Lou Newbaker on veterans issues, and then also Rebecca Austin. Starting back on the Human Services, Rebecca Austin. Please begin.
Hi, I'm Heather Mann. I'm here to lend support for the statewides, including the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station. I represent 24 commercial fishing vessels. These boats fish for ground fish off Oregon, and they also make up a large part of Oregon's distant water fleet, meaning they spend part of the year fishing in Alaska. I've been working with the seafood industry for 20 years, and I've testified often at these hearings. I equate them to a version of the Hunger Games, where we are all vying for our cause to stay alive, and often it's at the expense of another important effort or critical service. It begs the question, is applied research that results in robust fisheries more important than, say, education, or more important than services for our state's most vulnerable? I'm a mother of two middle schoolers. My husband is disabled and unable to work, and I fully believe that funding for applied research in fisheries is as important as education, as well as other critical services, and here's why. Our coastal communities, while small and remote, are part of the economic engine that fuels the state. The contributions of the fishing industry are part of what has sustained our coastal economy through hard times. The seafood industry employs thousands of Oregonians, generating millions of dollars. Many harvesting and processing companies are family businesses. You can't go to a sporting event in a coastal town and not see some type of sponsorship by the fishing industry. We're constantly supporting youth and other community activities. Fishermen are the first to donate to help homeless and other vulnerable citizens. Making sure that we protect our fisheries and fishermen is important. The ability to have research conducted on the impacts of climate change, on coastal resiliency, on new value-added seafood technologies, these are all critical to sustaining the seafood industry, which in turn helps to sustain Oregon communities and citizens. In closing, I urge you to fully fund the $9.4 million continuing service level for the statewides for the next biennium. Thank you.
Thank you for coming tonight to Tillamook County's honored senators and representatives. My name is Dave Wells, and I'm president of the forestry sub-local SEIU 503. So what I'd like to do tonight is I'd like to see increased revenue, and here's how I'd like you to spend it. Maintain funding for stewardship foresters and wildland firefighters. Last year, I saw a fire in Lane County that burned through acres of 15-year-old trees. I know someone here is from Lane County, which I heard. All those trees that burned, all they added to the economy was really a tax loss there. It wasn't really a benefit. We won't see the future benefits from those trees of living wage jobs and the harvest taxes that support schools and local communities like Tillamook, where I live. Not every forest fire can be stopped quickly, but without an adequately staffed, fully functioning and coordinated wildland firefighting system, the chance of the next one fire becomes very real and potential. It's raining now, but every year we have an August in Oregon, and that's when the Tillamook burn started. In Oregon also, we're connected to our forests. Wisely, in 1971, Oregon acted to the first in the nation Forest Practices Act, because that is our connection at that time was being lost between what we thought should be happening in the forest and what was happening in the forest. Our stewardship foresters work to prevent that rip in the forest connection. They ensure timely reforestation. They ensure that water is kept clean by ensuring road maintenance and buffer strip requirements. And these stewardship foresters maintain stewardship foresters at the current staffing level to keep our connection with Oregon forest secure. It's all about choices, clean water, wildlife, and rural jobs. I ask you to make the decision to raise revenue and keep Oregon green.
My name is Fred Postlewaite. I'm a banker headquartered in Newport, Oregon. We have 6 branches all on the coast. Many of the things you've heard tonight, many of the type of businesses, forestry, that top part of ag that has to do with fishing are things that we support with many dollars. We have about $20 million invested in fishing boats, and they range from Brookings to Astoria. It's a powerful economic force in the community. About 20 years ago, I joined COMES, the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station Advisory Council. It was one of the better things I've done because we got to know some of the researchers, and our industry lives and breathes on a lot of that research. I'm here tonight to ask for the $9.4 million that group needs to continue the existing level of services for statewides. That'd be a big help, and if you can help us there, we would appreciate it very, very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, if the next group will come forward, while they are coming forward, on deck from the education list will be Lizzie Gilbert, Leslie Garden, and it looks like Romy Carver. Please begin.
Good evening, co-chair, senators, and representative, and my senator, Senator Johnson. My name is Lou Neubecker, and I'm here representing the American Legion for the State of Oregon. I do represent several other organizations, military organizations also. But I want to thank the voters of Oregon who voted overwhelmingly, 84%, to approve Measure 96. Now and then I say the position of the American Legion is very simple. Restore the ODVA budget, $10 million budget that they requested, and let the $18 million generated by the measure go ahead and be funded by the Oregon Department of Veterans, and let them use that to help the veterans out. I thank you for hearing me tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your service.
Good evening, esteemed members of the Oregon State Legislature. My name is Doug Dryden. I'm from Philomath. I work with the Oregon Youth Authority. My colleagues have already rather eloquently painted the picture of the difficulty that we're struggling with for this biennium, which is a repetition of most other problems we have practically every biennium. I'll give you more of a strategic view, though. The state has already suffered the loss of the facility we had in Prineville some years ago. We're in the process of shutting down the facility of Hillcrest in Salem to move the program out to McLaren at Woodburn. And now we're talking about shutting down the facility at North Coast. That facility alone represents a sink of some $388,000 per month in the local economy. Understand, of course, that across the river in Washington, they're going through a similar situation, shutting down a facility up there. So that combined loss will have a synergistic effect on the local regional economy. It won't be just in the Astoria-Warrenton area, though. There's going to be a ripple effect, as we've seen historically, when we've gone through closures before, of staff moving down here and being very disruptive to the facilities we have right across the street. My concern, though, we're not going to solve the problem tonight, certainly, but taking, again, a strategic view, my concern is that we have to go through this practically every biennium. And every agency has to go through their own versions of it. The state clearly has, as you well know, a very strong revenue problem, which needs to be done. That's going to take courage in whatever form it takes in terms of being able to raise revenue, cut spending, whatever. And I encourage you to screw your courage to the sticking place, as Shakespeare said, and be able to make those hard decisions. I had a military career, and one of the sayings was, difficult decisions are the privilege of rank. And you there in the legislature have the ability to be able to do that. And we can appreciate the sacrifices you may have to make in order to do that, but there we are. If we cut the state facility at North Coast, what will happen in the next biennium? We're up against the wall in that respect. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Good evening. My name is Rebecca Austin, and I'm from Lincoln County Health and Human Services. I am the Public Health Director. I am here today in support of needed investments in the public health system. At some point, our state leaders will need to commit resources to public health in order to bring down the cost of health care. Our number one killer is tobacco-related diseases. One in three adults smoke, contributing to 68% of individuals with living with at least one chronic disease. The state gives us $68,000 to combat the tobacco industry that spends millions of dollars in advertising to capture the next generation of tobacco users. For communicable disease, we get $50,000 a year from the state. Last year, we investigated and controlled 323 communicable diseases and 9 outbreaks. That was a record for us. Of those 323 communicable diseases, 60% of them were sexually transmitted infections. And this number is up compared to 2015, which was a record breaker of STIs in the whole state of Oregon. I'm here to say we cannot keep up. If we had more money, we could implement nutrition and exercise programs to avoid the onset of chronic diseases. We might be able to prevent an eighth grader from using tobacco.
I could put a nurse out in the community to educate about communicable disease prevention. I tell my county commissioners to think about public health as a backup to public safety. We don't fight crime, we fight disease. In fact, our patrol officers in one of our remote areas will begin to help us out by taking condoms and sexually transmitted disease information out to the public when they meet people. While we understand that there are huge budget challenges, we ask you to please help us out.
Thank you very much. Now, if the next group will come forward. And this group should have been Leslie. I called up Lizzie Gilbert, Leslie Garden.
Gordon. Yes,
Gordon,
that's me.
And Romy Carver. So Lizzie's not here, right? You're... okay. Is Lizzie Gilbert here? If Lizzie Gilbert is not here, then I will call up Nanette Carter Jaffrey. Please begin. And also while I'm doing that, I will call up the next group after that, which will be, let's see, 12. Melissa Carlson Swanson, Kim Stitchler, and Gary Lawman. Please begin.
Thank you very much for making the effort to listen to us tonight. My name is Leslie Gordon, and I live in Nesquen, and I've worked with students and teachers in Tillamook County for the last 15-plus years. I believe very strongly that the measure of a society is how well it takes care of powerless and vulnerable individuals. And I feel like we are failing at this. Instead, we are supporting powerful corporations who now have the lowest tax rate in the country. Our children are our number one resource, and it's inexcusable that we are at the bottom of funding in education in the country. And I think it's important for the kids and for the future of our state that we improve that support by fairly taxing corporations, not by cutting programs. In the end, it's cheaper to do this and support education, provide what children need to be successful and productive members of society than it is to take care of the problems that are created if we don't do it now. You have a choice to be lenient with the corporations and make children pay the price, or to adequately fund education. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Romy Carver, and I'm submitting testimony on behalf of continued funding for local early learning programs, particularly the Preschool Promise program. Statistics validate the critical need for these programs, but I'd like to talk about my grandson, Ethan, in the picture, who attends Preschool Promise program. Ethan is 5 now, but he got off to a rocky start. When he was 17 months old, he and his older sister came to live with me, and I have since adopted them. At 17 months of age, Ethan didn't speak a word and didn't try. He faced a multitude of serious developmental, medical, emotional, and behavioral issues that hampered his ability to function. Since then, Ethan has been busy trying to catch up to his peers. He's completed early intervention at ESD, had surgery, went through occupational therapy, speech therapy, and continues in counseling. He's worked hard and he's come a long way, but despite all he's accomplished, he's still catching up and has been unable to focus on some of the scholastic and other skills he would need to be successful in kindergarten. I have been so grateful that he is enrolled in the Preschool Promise program. This is giving him the chance to learn what he'll need in kindergarten, as well as to continue to build social skills in a professional, supportive environment. The program is helping our family to connect to resources we all need, and I don't know what we'd do without it. This will affect him not only throughout his school career, but for the rest of his life. He would have fallen through the cracks in spite of all of our hard work if not for Preschool Promise. There are many Ethans across the state who have special needs and need that extra support and early intervention. Any investment into these kids is a direct investment into the future of our communities. I'll also add that I work for Columbia Pacific CCO, the Oregon Health Plan provider for this region, and we as an organization are deeply invested in early intervention practices as we recognize the significant lifelong health impact these efforts have upon overall individual and community health. Thank you for allowing me to tell you about Ethan and the positive impact that Preschool Promise has had. I urge you to prioritize early childhood funding and could, okay, sorry, thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Hello, my name is Nanette D. Carter Joffrey, and I'm coming from Multnomah County. I'm representing home care workers like myself who have the awesome responsibility of caring for those seniors, those with developmental disabilities, and those with mental and drug addictions, drug and alcohol addictions. My purpose in coming today is to stand up for all of my colleagues who aren't able to show up because they're working. They're not able to take off days to come and let you hear them tell you the devastation that they are seeing with those clients that they're caring for. We have people that are looking to us to provide them independence, to give them safety, to allow them the decency that they deserve in their latter years. Those suffering with dementia, those suffering with debilitating diseases, those who have suffered from brain injuries, the myriad of medical and physical conditions just cover everything. And the reality is that your cuts that we're looking at, the choices that are being made, the impact hits home. It may hit your home, but it definitely hits the homes that we work in. And we want you to know that whatever choices you make, we have to stand with these families. They need us. Whether we're paid to work with them or not, somebody's got to fill in, and we want you to stand with us in helping them. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to following up on what you're going to be doing.
Thank you. Now, the next group will come forward, and while they are coming forward, we are going to go back to the general list, and we're going to have Catherine Rickbone, Wayne, oh my goodness, Edmone, Economic Development, and Melanie Calvin. If I got that right, please begin.
Good evening. My name is Gary Lehman. I'm a retired healthcare professional. I live in Lincoln County. I'm here to represent and advocate for two issues, Medicaid and public health. But none of us can talk about our passions without talking about revenue. Let me just briefly say that Oregon corporate tax rates have declined over time, and other states seem to do well with higher rates. It's time for the legislation to take action and raise corporate taxes. Another issue that's rarely mentioned in this state, and that's sales tax. Sales taxes diversify and increase revenue. Sales taxes add money from non-resident purchases, and you can add a homestead exemption for food, housing, and clothing so that this form of taxation is not regressive. Now I want to turn to Medicaid. Do not reduce Medicaid spending. To decrease eligibility and reduce services would be a step backwards. Improve the CCOs. House Bill 2122, which you are considering this year, contains needed proposals. CCOs use public tax dollars, and they should be governed openly. CCO reserves should be protected and are not for corporate profits. Now, my passion, public health. Spending on public health should increase, especially for county health departments. The Oregon Health Authority allocates less than 5% of its budget for public health. House Bill 3100, the Public Health Modernization Bill of 2015, provides a framework for modernization, but the funding is inadequate. Higher OHP enrollment is changing the role of local health departments. Higher health health promotion and prevention are best done in local communities by local public health departments. More support for monetization, health promotion, and chronic disease is needed. Money spent in these areas will result in future savings.
Thank you very much.
Hello, my name is Melissa Carlson Swanson, and I'm the Branch Services Manager for Oregon Food Bank Tillamook County Services. I want to thank you for this opportunity to advocate on behalf of folks experiencing hunger in our community. I'm also here to ask you today to invest $4 million in the Oregon Hunger Response Fund in the 2017-19 Department of Services budget, Human Services. This important fund helps Oregon's 20 regional food banks acquire and distribute food to over 950 local agencies across Oregon, helping families during times of economic hardship and communities struck by natural disasters. Oregon Food Bank Tillamook County Services supports this request as a necessary measure to help stop the rise of hunger in Oregon. In Tillamook, we serve many families that are working multiple jobs, as well as seniors who have fixed incomes and they're struggling to make ends meet due to rising costs in food and housing. Oregon has a hunger crisis. Oregon experienced the nation's highest spike in its food security rate despite 50 consecutive months of state job growth. The hunger rate is based on a three-year average from 2013 to 2015 used by the USDA to evaluate food security. Oregon food security rate is 16.1%, which is sixth worst nationally, and its hunger rate is 6.6%, eighth worst nationally. Again, we ask that you invest $4 million in the Oregon Hunger Response Fund for the 2017-19 Department of Human Services budget. Thank you for your time.
Hello, my name is Kim Stitchler, and I'm a resident of Columbia County. I'm also a home care worker, and I work through DHS Seniors and People with Disability Office. Funding for our programs that I work through had major cuts in the last 2 years, leaving some of our most vulnerable citizens alone and unsafe and afraid. We had a choice in the last election to vote for or against Measure 97. Unfortunately, it was defeated. So now we face drastic cuts again. Oregon has the lowest corporate tax in the nation, and in my opinion, if that was raised slightly, it would save the budget and our seniors. Large corporations need to pay their fair share, as we all do. Comcast has $145 million in taxes that they owe to the state. They came after me for $342. That is, in itself, would take a big bite out of the deficit. If the seniors' programs are cut again, many will face moving to assisted living or nursing homes. That will cost the state a lot more money. And there aren't enough open beds to house them. Many will be left alone. In their homes for more hours every day. Some unable to safely work a stove to prepare food. Some unable to properly dress themselves or take their medication as directed. There's a man that I used to take care of in Seaside who's bedridden. He was taken off the live-in program last year, and his workers are only paid for 12 hours, but they are required to stay for 24, and they're told that they can leave, but if anything happens to him, they will be responsible. What if there was a fire, or he choked, or he had to go to the bathroom? He is totally bedridden. He would be sitting there for 12 hours if...
Thank you very much. Please, if the next group will come forward. And while they are coming forward, on deck will be Amanda Zimmerman, Crystal McCarty, and Haley Patterson. Please begin.
There you go. All right.
Hello, my name is Melanie Calvin. Thank you so much for your statewide listening tour. It's very important to us. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit that serves disabled Oregonians throughout the state. We're based in Portland, but I'm here to talk about the disabled homeless all throughout the state of Oregon. I'm here to support the General Assistance Program And many people who become homeless are sick and elderly, and whose their financial circumstances are completely out of their control because of an illness that could strike any one of us. A high percentage of the homeless people have disabilities. They cannot support themselves through work. I personally cannot imagine trying to cope with severe chronic illness without a place to live. The new general assistance program that was just refunded last session is an extremely innovative approach to helping disabled homeless while they are sometimes wait a horrible 2 years for federal disability benefits. Those benefits can be life-saving. Those benefits mean money for rent. Refunding the GA program was a unanimous vote last year. Thank you so much. This is a small but really concrete program that helps end homelessness for our most vulnerable citizens. The state employees that work at the combined disability determination units are crackerjack team. They are going to have fantastic results, and I am so thankful they're there because I get to refer my own clients to that unit at the state. These people, these state employees, can take years off the delay of the federal application process. I think that's me.
Very much.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Devlin and Co-Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Catherine Rickbone, and with me today is Wayne Belmont, Oregon Coast Council for the Arts, Newport Performing Arts Center in Newport. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts. We're here today representing the 8 cultural projects endorsed by the Cultural Advocacy Coalition for a total of $6 million in requests for the 2017-19 biennium, and I have a handout on that. These capital construction projects are very important to each community across the state. They'll grow jobs, expand access to cultural resources, preserve artifacts, support expansion of theaters, encourage cost-effective partnerships. These projects across the state strengthen the rural and urban communities, and it's a small investment to bring jobs and enhance the economy in each area. Wayne. Okay.
Co-chairs Devlin and Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is Wayne Belmont, and I'm actually here today in a capacity as a board member for the Oregon Coast Council for the Arts. And we decided we're going to try and do this 2-for-1. So we're going to try and do 2 minutes within for 2 people. And what I'm here to talk about is the economic impact of the arts and the projects that we're supporting. The arts engage the mind, and they nourish the soul. And I guess the recent Oscar ceremony is a notable exception. But again, we want to talk about the impact of arts on our economy. And there's 2 catchphrases that meet that. One is that the arts work, and the other is that the arts mean business. The Americans for the Arts has developed an economic multiplier to kind of measure the impact on local communities, and I'm going to give you a couple statistics here. Nationally, the arts industry generates about $135.2 billion of economic activity across the United States. Included in that, the arts industry generates about $44.3 billion in revenue to local, state, and federal governments. Here on the coast, the project we're supporting is the expansion of the Newport Performing Arts Center. And locally, the impact on the Performing Arts Center for the Arts is about $1.13 million. We enhance through user fees to the tune of about $2 million. And our total economic impact is about $7.4 million. So you can see we're an important economic driver. So we appreciate your support and especially thank Representative Gomberg and Senator Roblin for their continued support.
Thank you very much. Now if the next group will come forward. And while they are coming forward, I will call up Bryson Price, Leslie Gordon, and Dee Upton.
Hi, my name is Amanda, and I drove from McMinnville tonight instead of going to the Timbers game to be here to really encourage you and to implore you to fully fund Outdoor School for All and to not put it off and to fund it as soon as you can. My experience with outdoor school came as being a counselor in high school. I have a very passionate story about this that it changed my life. It literally inspired me to do what I do today, to be the person that I am. I probably would not have graduated high school if it weren't for the guidance that I got from the other counselors, from the lessons that I learned and being taught how to take care of my sixth graders as a counselor. I learned how to take care of myself. I learned how to go back to my high school and help take care of my friends that were not making good choices. Because of that, I was the first person in my entire family to go to college. When I went into my guidance counselor and said, you know I flunked like five classes last year and I don't know what I'm gonna do. Can I go to community college? The guidance counselor said, I don't have time for this. You need to focus on just graduating high school. That's gonna be hard enough, honey, and shuttled me out the door. And it was my fellow counselors that I went to outdoor school with who said, you can do this, we got it. I'll help you fill out your forms. And I was the first person in my entire family to graduate college. When I had experiences with other people that were struggling, it was because of outdoor school and learning how to be a volunteer and learning how to be a help to my community through outdoor school, that I was able to help others, that I started working with children in the foster care system, and that I became a caseworker and do what I do today because of what I learned at outdoor school. I really encourage you to fully fund it. Don't cut corners, because it cuts from the high school experience. And those high schoolers learn how to bring back those lessons to all the other kids that didn't get that opportunity, and it makes everyone's lives better. Thank you. I'm gonna cut out here.
Hi, my name is Kristen McCarty, and I'm here. I live here in Tillamook, and I just wanted to say thank you to the honorable senators and representatives that take your time to hear all these problems. I'm here to speak a little bit on ag education and career technical education. I have a little bit of a unique experience because I used to go to Silverton High School, which is in Marion County, and I now go here to Tillamook High School for my junior and my senior year. And in being in the career and technical education and then in the ag classes has helped me, I think, a lot in high school, because I haven't necessarily been the best in math and stuff like that, but when I go to my ag classes, I feel like I fit in. And with ag classes, they teach you real life experiences, and they give you real life training that you can take into the workforce if you don't necessarily have the credentials to go to college. My ag teachers have always been somebody in my life that I've looked up to and that have helped me through my high school career and even in my personal life. And I think that it's important that we are able to continue funding, because I think that ag program is something where any kind of student is welcome and any student is encouraged, and ag education is somewhere where people who don't necessarily advance in core classes are able to show that they are smart and that they do have a place in this world. And I just wanted to thank you for letting me speak today.
Hi, I am Haley Patterson. I'm here to talk about House Bill 2382 and Senate Bill 230, considering, this is talking about agricultural education. So right now I'm the current Oregon FFA State Vice President. I come from a small town, 300 people to be exact, in an even smaller high school. So like small high schools, mine was very focused and driven on sports. A, because there was nothing better to do, and B, everybody had to do it, otherwise there wouldn't be enough people for the sports teams. All right, so unfortunately for me, my little brother took all of the athletic ability that my family had, leaving me with none. So instead, I focused on academics. I focused on my extracurricular activities. I focused on being successful and doing well inside and outside of school. And these things, they are not very popular amongst high school students. So I never truly found my group of friends until I joined FFA. Once I joined, I was immediately surrounded with kids who also had the same passions, the same drive for success that I did. And well, to put it simple, in FFA, it's okay to be awesome. All right, and I'm not talking about academics, and I'm not talking about competitions. I'm talking about personal growth. I'm talking about career success and leadership. So in high school, I didn't only notice this push for sports, but I also noticed the pushing of these problem students out to the ag room. I'd had them in class, they weren't focused, they weren't motivated, and they were just goofing off, and teachers got tired of them, so they sent them to the ag room instead. Little did they know this was the best decision they could have made. As soon as these students went out to the ag room, my FFA advisor loaded them up on a bus and took them to this career show that our local ODOT put on. His reasoning behind that, this is the only opportunity some of these students will get to have an experience like this. If I have to leave you here with two things today, that's that FFA provides personal growth and FFA also provides a future for students. Thank you.
Thank you. Please come forward. The next group. And are you Dee Upton? Okay. Is Leslie Gordon in the audience?
Yes.
Oh, she must have signed up twice. Excuse me. Okay, then can I call Heidi Laquette to come to this group if she's here? Heidi. And then the next group up will be David McCall, Mr. Liu, and Doug McKelvin on Veterans Affairs. Please begin.
Hi, I'm Dee Upton, and I am here in two kind of positions. I'm one of the three directors for Tillamook County Outdoor School, and I'm also a sixth grade teacher here in Tillamook. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I'm very excited that Measure 99 passed in November with 67% of the vote, and it passed in 34 of the 36 counties. It's into the lottery funding dedicated to Measure 99 funds a week of outdoor school for every middle school student in Oregon. I understand that the legislature has to make excruciating choices in upcoming budget, and in making these hard choices, I urge you to fund every sixth grade student the ability to go to outdoor school. I believe this is an investment will pay dividends both in the lives of sixth graders, high school students, and the health of Oregon. I personally benefited from outdoor school because I attended outdoor school as a sixth grader here in Tillamook County. I then went on to go as a counselor. And I remember as a counselor, I was going to be a lawyer. And next thing I know, after being equipped with a special ed high school student that was older than myself as my co-counselor, as well as sixth graders, that I learned both about myself and about people. I learned about how to work in nature, how to be outside, and how to make that it's not just about myself or my students. It's about all of us working together to better something. We continued from there. I became a teacher. And in teaching, I now watch kids come from homelessness. I last year took a kid to outdoor school that is living in her car. It was the one experience of her life that was life-changing. She now attends school. She was down to a 20% attendance rate. She now attends school at 98%. This is valuable for all kids in grade school and high school. Please.
Hello, I am Bryson Price, and I am currently serving as an Oregon FFA state officer, and I have been an FFA member for 5 years. And in agricultural education and FFA, we have a system that works, and we refer to that as the three-circle model. And in short, that is classroom experiences, FFA membership, and a project we do outside of class called a supervised agricultural experience. And I'm here to share how that works both in my life and in the lives of other students. In my agricultural education classes, I had the opportunity to learn about customer service and marketing. And this is that first circle. And in the second circle, my FFA membership, I applied what I learned in the classroom. As well, I learned about sales and public speaking. This is that second circle. And then in the supervised agricultural experience, I had the opportunity to start and run my own landscape management business. And balancing that budget was hard enough. And I had the opportunity to apply what I learned in the classroom and from my FFA membership, as well as I learned sustainable business and financial practices while caring for customers and employees. And when we put all that together, there's a great power for learning, because as a state officer, I've had the opportunity to travel the state, visiting over 100 classrooms, speaking to 10,000 different students. And I've seen this three-circle model working in their life, because you see these students, they don't just memorize something for a test, take it and forget. They actually learn. And then when they graduate, they can use these things that they've learned to become productive members of society, and they have the skills that they need to do that. And in my life, what that's going to look like for me is to own my own small business and become actually a lawyer. And I look forward to doing that, and I'm thankful to agricultural education, ag teachers, and this three-circle model for giving me the skills that I need to do that. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you for being here tonight and giving me this opportunity to speak with you. My name is Heidi Luquette. I'm with Tillamook Bay Community College, and I am here on behalf of President Green, who could not be here tonight. And I have with me a fabulous group of community college students who I wish you could all hear from. And not only is Tillamook Bay Community College here with you tonight, but it's also Clatsop Community College and Oregon Coast Community College. And I think each of them had the opportunity to bring students with them. Together, it's very important to us that we share with you the message of $634 million. We are hoping that we will not be, community colleges will not be flat funded in this next biennium. I imagine that each of you has a community college in your district. Some of you have more than one. The importance of community colleges to rural counties in particular is really immense. And that's the three community colleges that you have in the room with you here today. When you hear the discussions of career technical education, we are the extension of that. So students that are in the FFA programs that you're hearing about tonight, there are opportunities for those students to dual enroll in community college classes. We are an opportunity to help educate rural America to get job skills, practical hands-on learning, so students can go on and we can build an educated citizenry. Tonight, again, our message is to please consider the 634. That's what we need. Otherwise, tuitions rise. Students pay the cost of that. We can't do it on the 550 on the previous budgeted. And we are asking for your support to look strategically at ways that we can work together to make sure that the community colleges in Oregon are funded and have what we need to help our students be successful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, if the next group will come forward, on deck will be Ellen Demmel, John Peterson, and Nick Watts. Also, there is 40 minutes left in this hearing, and if a few people were actually a little bit shorter than 2 minutes, we might actually get to everybody that signed up. So please begin.
Okay. Chair Devlin, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs, committee members, my name's Doug McElvin. I'm talking about Measure 96 funds to increase the number of veterans officers in the state. I'm also comparing Oregon to Oklahoma and Nebraska. I'm a life member of the Military Officers Association of America, Portland chapter, also a life member of the Disabled American Veterans chapter close to Tillamook. I'm a member of the Oregon State Bar and a former CVSO. I've given you each a page of spreadsheets I prepared. I've given you written testimony. I've cited my sources, looking at the federal VA website this week, talking to the ODVA council this week, talking to the Oklahoma manager for VA claims, and talking to the deputy director of Nebraska VA. My sheet I've given you has three tables. Table one, Oregon and Oklahoma have the same population, same number of veterans, but annual federal VA compensation for disability and pension. Oregon veterans receive about $1.3 billion. Oklahoma veterans, $1.8 billion. We're $500 million behind them. Table 2, percentage of veterans who receive federal VA disability compensation. Nebraska, number 1, about 30%. Oklahoma, number 2, about 26.5%. Oregon, down the list at number 19, about 20%. Why? I think mostly my table 3. Number of veterans officers in the state, Oregon, 90 versus 160 in Oklahoma. Nebraska, smaller than we have, they have more officers, 110. This yields veterans per veterans officer in the state. Oregon, about 3,600 veterans per officer. Oklahoma, better at 2,100. Nebraska, best at 1,300, almost three times better than Oregon. How do we add more officers to Oregon? How do we help close that $500 million gap with Oklahoma? Using Measure 96 to the fullest extent, voters overwhelmingly passed that. Thank you.
Honorable Senator and Representatives, my name is Xin Liu, and I'm the owner of Oregon Oyster Farms in Newport, also co-owner of Pearl Point Oyster Farms at Nitars Bay with Mark Weigert. So I'm here speaking for Oregon State University, Coast Oregon Marine Experimental Station. And I do hope you continually support the research program at Coombs like you have been doing. Two aspects from my talk. One is the benefit from research, also some challenges. And we all know ocean conditions has been changing. The ocean acidification has caused a serious problem for the hatchery, like Whiskey Creek hatchery. And they produce a tremendous amount of baby oysters for the medium size or small size oyster farms. And like as a farmer, no seed, no production. We depend on the hatchery. And many years selection from the Mollusca Broodstock program at Oregon State University Combs has been improving the performance of all the oyster broodstock. And we have a better survival rate and a better better growth, better setting rate. And at Oregon Oyster Farms, now 100% of our production is from the Combs Research Program. And they have a better growth rate, better meat content, also has a better disease resistance. Second, the challenge, and I will talk about is the food safety. And we all know food safety is critical, not only to the consumer, but also to the producer. And it could damage the consumer confidence on the producer, and it could cause, also could cause the tremendous economic losses for the producer. And the research can help us to minimize the impact. And we do need your support to, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. McCall, before you start, I was gonna try to call, I don't see anybody coming forward. I had called previously Ellen Dammel, John Patterson, and Nick Watts. So if they're here, please come forward. If not, go ahead and start.
Good evening. My name is David McCall. I live in Bay City, and I'm very proud to be the chair of the Tillamook County Democrats. As you know, it is common practice to leave the best for the end, and I'd like to thank the Ways and Means Committee for continuing that practice and making sure that Tillamook County is acknowledged as the best place in this state, one of the best places in the country, leaving us out at the end. We're also very proud to be served by some incredibly great individuals in the form of our senators and representatives. Thank you for being for us out there. When I was growing up, I was taught that your reputation is the most important virtue you can have. That reputation stays intact when you keep your word. Just like if I were to build a hotel, and I would hire a contractor to do some work, I would expect to pay that contractor the full amount of money he is due. Just like when I go into a hotel, I pay the full money that I expect to pay for the night. Now, I understand that PERS reform is necessary. I'd just like to remind you that PERS is a contract with the employees, and we need to respect that contract so we can maintain a reputation. Also, education is very important. Right now, my daughter is attending one of the finest universities in the state and in this country. We're also paying as much for 1 year in our state university as I paid for 4 years at a private university when I went to school not all that long ago. And I'd also like to ask you to remember that we are here in Tillamook County in a gem. It's very important that we continue to protect the environment, protect the things that we have, and maintain resources so we can keep this the wonderful place that it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Since the previous group I called did not come forward, I'm gonna call a new group. If you'd come forward to the front, Lori Dyer, Burgett Reisling on community colleges, and Macy Yates. And then on deck will be Gary Albright, Mike Cohen, and Mike Trent. Please begin.
Good evening.
My name is Brigida Reisling. I'm the president of Oregon Coast Community College in Lincoln County. Thank you all so much for being here this evening. I'm echoing the testimony that you heard earlier on behalf of community colleges and recognizing the, particularly the students that came out this evening to be here. I want to make the point that community colleges are the engines of economic opportunity. There has been increasing research across the United States looking at this question of the American dream and upward mobility. And that is it true that someone, regardless of their circumstances, has the chance and the opportunity to raise from that bottom level of income into a higher level in their lifetime? And unfortunately, that is not nearly as true as we would like it to be. But there are a few things that make a difference, and one of those is public education. So we know that public education can move people up in terms of their economic income, and that helps them, their families, and their communities. At community colleges, we are in the business of producing civically engaged taxpayers, and that is for the benefit of everyone in this room and across Oregon and across the nation. You have all been very difficult choices to make, and you have started some work in terms of trying to invest in public education here. I urge you to continue that. We are the second highest in terms of student tuition fees in the Western states, and that same research that says that education can lead to that upward mobility, that same research is telling us that it's actually diminishing because the doors to education are closing. Thank you.
Please begin.
Hi there. My name is Macy Yates, and I'm here to talk to you about Outdoor School for All. I am an early product of Outdoor School. It's hard to believe, but yes, it's been around for a long time. I went as a sixth grader through the Multnomah County ESD program back in 1970-something. I also attended five times as a high school counselor, and it was one of those things that probably kept me going in high school because I was not necessarily your all-star student. One of the things about Outdoor School for counselors is that you don't have to be the super eager beaver achiever to go. In fact, at times, we're really looking for the folks that are on the bubble. And there are so many opportunities for folks to develop leadership skills at an early age. And for me, it led on to serving five times as a high school counselor and going to college, attending the University of Oregon, and two times during college, sneaking away to be a resource specialist for Outdoor School. Since then, I have enjoyed a 34-year career in natural resources, and one important thing for Outdoor School is that it is for everybody, not just the privileged, not just folks in Portland, not just folks here in Tillamook that already enjoy a great program, but this is a program that is going to help every single child in the state of Oregon have an opportunity to get outside and get some exposure, and who knows, maybe they'll end up in the natural resources field. And we would really like to see more women and more people of color getting involved in the natural resources field, and this is a great way for that to happen. I urge you to take a serious look at fully funding Outdoor School for All. Thank you.
Next, please.
Hi, my name is Lori Dyer. Thank you all so much for providing this opportunity tonight. I'm a speech-language pathologist. I work in early intervention in Clatsop County, which is birth to three, so I'm the opposite end of the educational spectrum from community colleges and universities. But I am here tonight to urge you to protect the budget for early intervention services, and I really only have two arguments that I'd like to provide tonight. And the first is personal. Two of the families that I serve are here with me tonight. And under our current budget, I am only able to provide once a month visits to these families, and it is not enough. On a personal level, it breaks my heart to only be able to provide monthly services to our youngest and our most vulnerable children. My other argument is from a practical level. To provide services
from the ages of 0 to 3 will save us money in the future. The more that we can provide to children when they are young and they are at a stage where the world is first opening to them, if we can serve them early, we will not have to serve them as much later on. So I just, you know, whatever can be done, please do. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, if the next group will come forward and on deck. Annie Narajo Rivera, Roberta Dunn, and Rose Lewis.
Hi, my name's Mike Trant. I'm a dairy farmer from South Tillamook County. And I've been a 4-H leader for almost 20 years and in a traditional livestock club. And most recently, I've been a co-leader in a Powered by Teens Club, which is based on leadership skills and community activity. And I'm a junior livestock chairman for Tillamook County for the last 18 years. 4-H is a vital tool for positive youth development, and OSU Extension Service is pivotal in the program. OSU brings a backbone of a great program in every county and plays a crucial part of helping youth gain skills in ways that ain't available in other ways. I have seen shy youth. I'm nervous. I've seen shy youth just come out when these programs are going. And it plays a big part, Extension does, in this. And for this reason, I really want you to support Senate Bill 805. Thank you.
My name is Mike Cohen, and I am the director of the Tillamook Small Business Development Center. In a rural location like Tillamook County, almost all of our businesses fit into the category of small businesses, with most having fewer than 5 full-time equivalent employees. The SBDC serves a critical role in assisting those businesses with vital and free expertise when they need it the most. This expertise includes financial, operational, and planning advisory services. Our center is funded by the state in a match with federal funds from the Small Business Administration. The dollars that fund the SBDC are not an expenditure for our economy. They're an investment in our economy. The funding that we receive is multiplied 5 times in terms of the economic impact that we return to the community. If any of our local banks here were offering a 500% annual return on their deposits, I think the line of would-be depositors would stretch the entire length of downtown Tillamook. Last year, we assisted over 120 businesses in just this single rural county. That led to the creation and retention of over 40 jobs. Our assistance also led to the additional investment of $1.77 million into those businesses. I could expound on all kinds of statistics for you, but suffice it to say, we make a huge difference to the economy of Tillamook County, and we'd like to be able to do even more. Thanks.
Thank you for being with us this evening. My name's Gary Albright. I'm the director of the Tillamook County Pioneer Museum. And I also have the distinct privilege of occasionally teaching political science at the community college. And what I tell the students every time I have that privilege, that one of the best things about the state of Oregon is what they did with the Oregon Cultural Trust. And they made it possible for the average citizen, me, to decide where my tax dollars went. And they do it to this day. And I would like to encourage more of the same. And not just because you get a tax credit for it if you make a matching thing to some other nonprofit, but because it gives you the opportunity to learn what's great and to feel part of the process. And the reason I bring up the Oregon Cultural Trust is its partnership with Oregon Humanities. Those people have made a big difference in the life at the Pioneer Museum. We have a great speaker series. They provide most of our speakers, and they are wonderful. And they're not just wonderful in their presentation, but their humanity, their willingness to bring in disparate and sometimes very uncooperative members of the community. It's important what they do, and they do it every day. And then they take it a further step where in the last 6 years they've made the opportunity possible to have conversation projects. It's no longer the smartest guy in the room standing up front. It's now you got as much ground as anybody in the room, and there's no disparity. This is very egalitarian. It works very well, and they bring in great people like Isabel Wilkerson. And once they do come to Tillamook County, then they take everyone in the state, including the recognized Native tribes and all the counties, and bring them in places like Newburgh to talk about things like, you know, our place, this place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please come forward. And who is Miss Lewis? Is Miss Lewis part of this group? No, Miss Lewis. Yeah, I'll call the next one. So, Alicia Hawkins, if you can join this group, if you are still in the audience, Alicia Hawkins. Here she comes. Okay, and while that, then we will go to... Yes, that's fine. And then on deck will be David Jameson, Jim, it looks like KUSZ, on community colleges, and Ms. Tolan, so please begin.
Hi, I'm Annie Naranjo Rivera, and I live in Manzanita. I also serve as the vice chair for the Tillamook County Democrats, so welcome to Tillamook County, everyone, and thank you to everyone who came to fill the room. I wanted to start by talking about raising our revenue. Oregon has the lowest corporate taxes in the country, mainly because corporations pay minimum taxes, and those taxes are low. In fact, we're dead last in corporate taxes. I understand the challenges that our state faces, and I know you must make tough decisions in this budget. However, I don't believe you should consider making any cuts to essential programs that Oregonians rely on, like healthcare, education, or public safety, while we continue to have the lowest corporate taxes in the nation. You must choose our priorities. We can't have these kind of low corporate taxes. We can have lowest corporate taxes, or we can fund our critical programs. I urge you to put Oregon families ahead of the profits of out-of-state businesses. If we look through the lens of intersectionality, we see that when we cut programs that affect one community, it has a ripple effect on many communities, and it unravels the fabric of our state. So I want you to think about that as you're making these hard choices. I'm also here as an advocate for Planned Parenthood, wearing many hats. Planned Parenthood helps over 70,000 Oregon patients every year. The services that they provide save upwards of $70 million a year by helping women prevent over 14,000 unintended pregnancies, and that's just a fraction of the services that they provide. Planned Parenthood operates 12 health centers in Oregon that deliver incredible value to public health goals and to our patients. Those health centers perform breast exams, pap smears, and offer STI screenings, high blood pressure screenings, and physical exams. I want to make sure that OHP patients continue to have the freedom to choose access to care at Planned Parenthood.
Thank you very much for meeting with us tonight. Thank you for the care you take in supporting individuals and families across the state to live their best lives. My name is Alicia Poole Hawkins, and I live in Clatsop County. I have four kids, and my youngest is here with me tonight. His name is Liam. He currently receives services through early intervention and the developmental disabilities. Please support early intervention services, early childhood special education, and developmental disability services. These services provide essential support to families and children with disabilities and developmental delays. Without funding for these vital services, my 2-year-old son would not have received the support necessary for him to grow and develop. In rural communities, early intervention services and early childhood special education services provide some of the only specialized care and instruction available to very young disabled children. In communities like mine across the state, children count on these services so they can access a quality education. Likewise, please consider fully funding support for developmental disability services. Individuals really need the support to meet daily needs, and I believe we need to be a community and a state that steps up to provide these essentials. My son's medical and therapy needs would be astronomical without his insurance and Medicaid. We count on OHP Medicaid. Early intervention and early childhood special education are already stretched thin, trying their best to provide care for infants and young children in our communities. The need is great. If anything, we need more funding to properly provide these children for these children and to ensure that they will be able to access the education that they need, not only to survive but to thrive. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and committee members, my name is Roberta Dunn, and thank you for being here in Tillamook and having this opportunity for us to share. I am the executive director of FACT Oregon, a nonprofit organization that exists to empower families raising children experiencing disability in their pursuit of a whole life for their son and daughter. We happen to be one of the funded family-to-family networks and the one that serves families here in Tillamook and the surrounding coastal counties. But here tonight, I'm here to share not in my professional capacity, but as a parent myself. I have concerns that the budget, as we're facing the cuts, is going to impact our ability to provide services to individuals such as my son, who happens to experience developmental disability. I believe that everyone has a right to pursue a whole life that is beautifully ordinary. Developmental disability services provide supports that enable individuals to live and work in their community. And with the support currently available, that's exactly what my son does. He works at his local Buffalo Wild Wings. He lives in his own condo with a roommate. He shops at his local supermarket and pays taxes. Connecting with the family-to-family network is a great foundation for families new to diagnosis and all along the way as they're pursuing a whole life that is beautifully ordinary for their sons and daughters. With that whole life in mind, they depend on the availability of DD services to meet the needs and to reach the goals across their lifespan. I'm concerned that with the proposed cuts that we're facing in the governor's budget and the co-chair's existing resources framework budget, that we will jeopardize our DD system's availability to meet the needs and to provide the services necessary to support individuals with developmental disabilities. I'm asking tonight that you would support the current service funding levels for Department of Developmental Disabilities. Thank you
very much. If the next group would come forward. While they are coming forward, I would like to call up David Yamamoto, Commissioner Yamamoto, Neil Lemery, and Julie. It looks like starts with a C. It looks like C, L, and Cabe, who wants to speak about developmental disabilities also. So please begin.
My name is David Jamison. I live in Lincoln City. My concern is higher education affordability and investment. The proposed funding level for the Public University Support Fund is inadequate. The universities need at least an investment of $100 million to keep tuition increases near 5%. We're headed toward a great divide in our state where only relatively wealthy families will be able to send their kids to college. In 2016, the Graduate School of Education at the University of Pennsylvania released the findings of a study titled 2016 College Affordability Diagnosis. Some of the findings of that study include Oregon is ranked 38th in college affordability, placing us in the bottom 25%. The study measured affordability based on household income. For comparison, Washington's number 12, California's number 4, and Idaho's number 17. About 25% of Oregon families earn $30,000 or less per year. In Lincoln City, $30,000 is about the median household income. For Oregon families earning $30,000 or less per year, 74% of family income would be required to attend the state's public research institutions full time. That is impossible. By 2020, 70% of jobs in this state will require a post-secondary credential, but as of 2014, only 41% of our state's working-age adults had an associate's degree or higher. The state is on a 10-year downward spiral in investment in higher education. In a February speech, Oregon State's President Edward Ray said, "Oregon's disinvestment in higher education must not continue. After being adjusted for inflation, our state support for higher education has declined 21.7% since 2008, which is 20 more percent than the national average. If Oregon can't keep up with other states, we risk economic decline."
Thank you very much. Next.
Good evening. My name is Maylise Tolan. I'm from Lincoln City. I'm the principal at Taft 712, and I'm also the 3A, 4A secondary administrator rep for Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. In my 15 years in Oregon education, I've watched education budgets unintentionally pit the arts, CTE programs, and advanced courses against each other. With the difficult task before you, please make these decisions stop. All education is important for all students, pre-K through higher education. Recently, I watched students I have failed be positively impacted by partnerships with OSU Extension and Oregon Coast Community College. Through OSU Extension Networking, Joe Steer, who's right over there, a Taft grad, orchestrated an amazing learning opportunity at the Oregon Logging Conference. Our students are now excitedly preparing their academic pathways to enter logging, diesel mechanic, and forestry careers. At the same time, Oregon Coast Community College is currently supporting 25 of my Business 101 students with an experience my building budget cut 5 years ago. I appreciate their efforts, but I'm saddened at the same time for all of those students who have lost that opportunity. College support doesn't stop there, though. OCCC has also partnered with North Lincoln Samaritan Hospital, where three of my students and three other Lincoln City residents are currently earning their CNA license, not only a career pathway, but a vital occupation in our community. My mom raised me to believe that in my family, we support all those in education and all public service. The more we are educated and feel safe, the better equipped we are to fund and support all of the other vital programs we need for a stable Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
First, thank you all for being here and staying a little bit longer and giving us a little extra time. I saw what you did, so I appreciate that. And I could be really short and say what she said and be off of here, but I'm here actually in much a different capacity. I'm here as a father, a grandfather. I'm also here as a safety individual that works for a fire district in North Lincoln County. But I'm also a facilitator and teacher at Oregon Coast Community College. And again, I want to thank you for being here, but I hear a lot of people say that you have a tough job. You guys and gals have an awesome job. You have a big responsibility and some tough decisions, and we understand that. When I listen to all the programs and I see firsthand the things that we need for medical health and you name it, I walk into people's homes in the worst days of their lives. And I want to say that it's not always easy to see the things and the challenges that we have to face financially. But when I look at it over my career and over my life, I realize the bottom line with all these decisions that people make is education. If we don't put education first in our country and our state, we will not have educated individuals to make good decisions, to teach their children to be good parents, and to continue. So it's not about one budget year, or it's not about your legacy. It's about the legacy of all our children and all the people that come after we are long gone. And I'm not a native Oregonian. I've lived in California, and I was born in a little town in Illinois called Chicago. And I've lived in a lot of different places, and I've seen a lot of things that were done wrong, and many, many things were done right. But I love Oregon. I've lived here now for, gosh, almost 29 years. And living here, I've seen one thing that I really, really like. It's a mosaic of really great people and great communities and great counties. And I think with your support, a lot of these things could be done. But if we don't put education first and foremost, we're going to have the same problems for the next generation and next generation to come. And thank you very much.
Thank you. The next group will come forward. And while they are coming forward, me make sure I have this right. The next group on deck will be Sharon Vincent, Vera Wildauer, and Doug Olson.
Co-chairs and committee members, thanks for being here. I'm Julie Chick from Nehalem here in Tillamook County. As a mother of a child with Down syndrome who attends public school here in the county, I am asking you to fully fund supports for Oregonians with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The supports we depend on are the Oregon Health Plan, direct support services, case management, and family-to-family networks. Our family, as many, many families in Oregon, depends incredibly on direct support services so our son can live and learn in a safe environment at home and within his community. The caregivers funded through the services do some of the most strenuous, courageous, and heroic work to care and support our kids and must be paid a living wage. We as parents cannot do without them as they often become part of the family and provide the necessary support we need. Without case management for those experiencing disabilities, we would be lost as parents trying to navigate the ever-changing landscape and web of confusion. And we may never find the services our son needs, especially out here in rural Oregon, where the services are few and far between. We need our family-to-family networks so we can learn from each other and support one another. With these family networks, we can collaborate in order to expand our limited resources, experiences, and services. Oftentimes, our family finds the best resources from the families that have taken this journey before us. And please continue to fully fund the Fairview Housing Trust in order to keep the housing affordable and safe and accessible for those with disabilities. Please do not let Oregon regress to the days of darkness for those experiencing disabilities and fund these services. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Neil Emery, and I'm president of the Tillamook County Master Gardeners Association. We exist to support OHSU extension services, horticultural programs, educational services, and we provide evidence-based scientific advice and information to the general public. We have 80 members, and we are very active. And in the past 31 years, 600 local people have gone through the Master Gardeners training. That's a 12-week course that OSU staff provides to this community. It's very intense, and it's all based on scientific evidence. We operate a plant clinic at the Extension office, and we staff that 9 months out of the year. And in that work, we provide 9,000 hours of community service to this community every year. That's the equivalent of 4 full-time OSU Extension employees. So we are saving staff time and staff resources to better inform the community. We also have provided 900 hours of community service to OYA across the street here. They operate a gardening program, and we staff that on Friday mornings, and we help a number of kids learn gardening skills, self-esteem, and some career possibilities. And they also go through the Master Gardeners training, and we tutor them as well. So we're very active in the OYA. We have a learning garden at the county fairgrounds, and we work on that every week. And last year, we had 1,500 visitors come through the learning garden and learn scientific processes to be better gardeners. And that learning garden produces 800 pounds of produce for food banks in our community every year. We have a spring pruning day that we go out and serve shut-ins and seniors, and we also teach a Seeds to Supper program, which...
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner.
Esteemed members of Ways and Means, thank you very much for coming to Tillamook. For the record, my name is Dave Yamamoto. I am the newest member of the Tillamook County Commission. As such, I have the honor of being able to attend County College, which is a joint venture with Association of Oregon Counties and Oregon State University Extension. We had a very interesting November, this last November. There were 36 new commissioners and judges elected in November, a record number. I've been meeting with many of those at County College. Of the 36, about 33 are attending County College on a regular basis. I'm getting to know most of the new commissioners very well, and I'm very proud to say that over 90% of these new commissioners and judges are very strong supporters of our natural resource-based economies that we have here in Oregon. We're talking timber, we're talking agriculture, and we're talking fishing. And those, I feel, are very important. It's an equity issue of rural versus urban needs and wants, and I think it's very important that you consider both when you make your determinations. One of the things I want to talk about is the Oregon Agricultural Heritage Program, which will be before you for funding. I feel that's a very, very important program, and I think because of all the great FFA members we have here tonight, many of whom you have heard from, it's just an amazing program, and agriculture must continue to exist in the state of Oregon. And we have to do all we can to make sure that they exist on a very high level. There is continuing pressure on the natural resource-based industries here in Oregon, and it's very, very deeply felt in rural communities such as Tillamook County. It's not that we don't want or are unable to help ourselves. Tillamook County was very late to the transient lodging tax table, and yet we are collecting a lot of money in transient lodging taxes, and yet our hands are tied because we cannot use more than 30% of that money in areas that Tillamook County feels are extremely important. 30% of that money is going to our Tillamook County roads, which were the worst in the state, now getting much better. But it's an issue of equity again. We're being hamstrung by the hospitality industry in the metro area, makes it very difficult. I can sum up in three words: family, wage, jobs.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now, if the next group will come forward, I will call up Nicole to be on deck. Nicole Silverman. It looks like James Alahard or Alibard, speaking about the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and Sharon Statler. Please begin.
All right. Senators and representatives and other people from this wonderful state, thank you. I am Sharon Vincent, a former school teacher, now a caregiver. I'm also the daughter, the sister, and the mother of vets who stayed long enough to retire from the services. So putting all that together, what I'm here to do tonight is to urge you to make choices that will continue the services for our seniors, our people with disabilities, our vets, our children, our education. two facts. In 2015, the CEO of Comcast made $26.2 million. And in 2016, after the defeat of Measure 97, he got a paltry $4.4 million raise, which now means he makes $40.68 million. Now, I wanted to know what that money would equate for us, just plain ordinary people. So I found out that his salary, 2016, $40.68 million, could have fed 16 million school students, breakfast and lunch. Also in education, his salary alone, not counting anything else from Comcast, his salary alone would have paid for 1,000 of the teachers, which means more classrooms, and it would have, if we figured $950 per student, his salary would have paid for 44,405 students' books, pens, papers, you name it. Now, oops, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Doug Olson. I live in Pacific City. I've been elected official here in Tillamook County for about 20 years. Currently, I'm in my third term on the Tillamook PUD. I also serve on some other boards, our Tillamook Regional Medical Center, Economic Development Council. But I'm not here tonight to talk about any of that. You've heard across the state things that we should save and things maybe that should be reduced in some form. What I'm here to talk about tonight is how you can all become statesmen or statespeople. When you go back to Salem, you have to make the grand bargain. You've got to strike a bargain to balance the budget under the Oregon Constitution. You know that. And maybe the way you do that is you start with both sides of the ledger. You go say to the teachers union, the SEIU, the environmental community, and others, maybe not this year, maybe next time, we'll try our best to hold the line. Then you go to these corporations like was mentioned, Comcast, Safeway, Fred Meyer, Nike, Intel, and you say, we need about $900 million from you folks, and we need it now. But I can almost guarantee you from my contacts over the years in the business community, until you work both sides of that ledger in earnest, you're going to have a hard time getting money that you should from the corporate community. But I do think they'll cooperate. I'm a native Oregonian. I grew up here, as I said. I'm a graduate of our high school and university system, and I love this state dearly. And I don't want to see it go down the way it's going. We're on a trend that can be reversed if we do something about it now. And you all, as was said earlier, you're in the enviable or maybe unenviable position of being able to do something about it. But you've got to screw up your courage. You've got to take on the people at your political peril. And you all understand that. They may try to take you out in the primary, but let's put your name up there next to Governor McCall, Mark Hatfield, Edith Green, and the others. Thank you.
My name is Vera Wildauer. I'm board chair of the Hoffman Center for the Arts in Manzanita, Oregon. It's a small community art center that's fully run by volunteers only. This testimony is intended to support funding for the Oregon Arts Commission and statewide funding for arts and culture through the Oregon Cultural Trust and its statewide partners. State funding is important to the survival of an all-volunteer rural community arts center like ours. Grants from the state help build credibility with individual donors and other foundations to attract more donations to us. Help us also to jumpstart new programming that we couldn't get off the ground without an initial investment. We have received numerous grants from the Tillamook County Cultural Coalition, which is the Oregon Cultural Trust partner in Tillamook County, including the installation of our very first kiln nearly 10 years ago. The Hoffman Clay Studio now is the only studio open to the public between Astoria and Lincoln City. Demand is growing, and last year we had 155 unique participants in the clay studio and added a second kiln. We've also received grants for literary events, which help bring more visitors to Manzanita and support local businesses. This year, we are launching a new online learning program so that we can serve more of our coastal community with more in-depth instruction and on their own schedule. The arts are really important to our community. We have a lot of retirees, and for them, it's a support in an affordable venue with great, knowledgeable teachers. It has opened my world, says one. I've found friends, increased my ability, honed my craft. I cannot express too strongly how the center has made my life richer. And we have many more quotes like that. You'll have this written testimony to see. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, if the next group will come up. Ladies and gentlemen, I have asked, as was stated earlier by one of the people testifying, for the committee to stay 20 minutes longer than they would normally stay. They have all agreed to do that. That would be approximately about 8:30. There are about 10 people that have still signed up late. I am not going to be able to get to those tonight. Those people can submit their testimony in writing, as all of you can if you would like to send it in writing. But many of the people up here listening to your testimony still have to travel as much as 2 or 2.5 hours tonight, and I need to get them all home tonight sometime tonight. So if you will please be our final group, please begin.
My name is Sharon Statler. I live in Bay City. I'm a Blue Star mother. I'm an Army mom of 15 years. My son did 2 tours in Iraq. I live with a veteran who served in both the Air Force and the Army National Guard. I'm here to appeal to Governor Kate Brown to understand that cutting VA benefits is a true betrayal of our deserving vets. Please reconsider. Veterans Affairs is in need of the additional monies that were approved. Let me ask you, are you a veteran? Is your husband or your son or daughter? If you had a child serve their country in the military and you sent them off to war as a whole person, 100% physical, mental, and emotional, and the person who returned to you after giving 100% in the war was only 20% recognizable as the child you sent over, how would you feel if your government wanted to hold back on any money that was approved that would help your soldier, your child? These U.S. citizens who marched, convoyed, flew, and sailed directly into battle lived on only 2 liters of water a day for drinking and washing in the desert for 14 months, ducked gunfire, tripped mines and IEDs, had to make a life-changing decision as to whether they should shoot a 10-year-old boy as he's running toward them, waving a sword, and had been blown 20 yards in a blast that killed their buddy, et cetera. There's so many things that these soldiers and sailors have had to endure that we'll never know. These American soldiers and sailors have not come home to their families as the 100% whole person they left.
They left us.
Proceed.
My name is Jim Allenbrand. I'm the commander of the District 2, which is Tillamook County, Clatsop County, Columbia County, Veterans of Foreign Wars. To continue the discussion, the ODVA representative presented the funding for the ODVAs is an investment. He gave the statistics. Oklahoma is bringing $500 million more dollars into their economy than Oregon is. And one of the biggest reasons is underfunding and undermanned staffing of veteran service officers. Funding that we voted for on Measure 96. Cutting the general fund budget for ODVA from $13 million down to $3 million is a drastic cut. I don't know if there's any other area in the state that's facing an 80% cut in funding. I would ask that you would do what you can to reduce the size of that cut and make an investment for our military.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your service.
Co-chairs Devlin, Nathanson, and members of the Joint Committee, thank you so much for your time. I'm here tonight pleading that you guys fully support funding to family networks as they are vital to our children and our families' livelihood. Developmental disability services and family-to-family networks are programs that take families and children experiencing disability, families like mine, barely existing, merely surviving, to dreaming big dreams and living full, empowered lives in our community. These programs take families living in crisis and survival mode to having our children experiencing disability, being contributing individuals to our job force, and I can't even read, actively living and participating in our society. Here's our story in the perspective of my 8-year-old son, Benjamin. Dear Mr. Legislator, my name is Benjamin. I am 8 years old. When I was younger, my mom thought that because I experienced cerebral palsy and autism, I might not have a full life like other typical kids around me. She thought because I have so many obstacles working against me, I might not have many friends or the ability to really be part of a community. 2 years ago, she was invited to a family network event. She heard things she had never really thought about before. The concept that disability is natural, presuming competence in one's child, and how every person has the right to a whole empowered life and community. After that event, my mom and dad changed, and my whole life really changed. My mom continued learning more about what natural supports and community building look like from her family network. Mr. Legislator, my life changed because of FACT, our local family network. Would you please make sure it sticks around? Because just like my mom, some of my friends, moms, and dads really need to hear that every person can live a full, empowered life and be an active part of their community. Your friend, Benjamin. Thank you very much for your guys' time tonight.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of the committee, I would like to thank all of our legislative staff that have made these hearings possible. I'd like to thank all of you on behalf of the committee and the Oregon Legislature. This concludes our hearing this evening. You can still send in written testimony. I'm supposed to make an announcement, though. Tillamook High School.
Guys, listen up.
Tillamook High School Cheesemakers just beat number 2 LeGrand in boys. And fortunately, I do not have any. And fortunately, I do not have.